Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 394. Welcome back to the show. Well, I hope you enjoyed last week's program. You know, I did get home at about 5 o'clock p.m. that last weekend, and we went to the Midwestern Masonic Education Conference. If you want to know more about that conference, I'll kind of give you a quick rundown. It started in 1949, and it's the MCME. It's, again, Midwest Conference on Masonic Education. The entire thing, their mission statement, is to provide a communications and support network for members from member jurisdictions, conduct an annual forum for Masons who have a vital interest in Masonic education, to offer the opportunity to share Masonic experiences, knowledge, and insights, and publish occasional newsletters, communications, and the proceedings of its annual meeting. Now, this particular conference was interesting. This was the 70th annual Midwest Conference. It was in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, so it took us about 4 hours to get there, and it was at the Doubletree Hilton, Cedar Rapids. We had a conference room. It was interesting. Not as balls to the wall as a lot of other conferences are with working lunches and 10-minute breaks. There were significant breaks and things throughout. The conference schedule was interesting. We did miss Friday, right? We had a stated meeting at our lodge, so we left right after at about 10 o'clock at night. Spencer Hammond, myself, and Scott Duball all hopped in a car that we rented, and we drove through the night, and we pulled in at 3:15 at a Residence Inn. Unfortunately, it was the wrong Residence Inn. There are two in Cedar Rapids. We needed to go to the Residence Inn North. And so we finally pulled into the parking lot at about 3:30, and then got to bed about 4 o'clock, and we're all up at 7:15 to grab a coffee, some yogurt, as we drove over about a 10-mile drive to, maybe a little less, to the conference center where we stayed up all day long, and we got in. And first thing in the morning was a really great presentation by Daniel Gardner. He's the Grand Secretary of Montana. Now, something that to think about is that, number one, Dan is not an old guy. Dan is a fairly young gentleman. And he actually wrote a massive, massive article which contains an entire ritual for the Scottish Rite Southern Jurisdictions Research Society, or the Scottish Rite Research Society, in their last transactions, which is a really great book. I would recommend becoming a member of the Scottish Rite Research Society. The cost gets you a really nice research book every year. It's called Hieridum, and occasionally you'll get other books as well. So Brother Dan, Right Worshipful Brother Dan, actually talked about the way American ritual was formed and the progenitors of these degrees. He really contends that Preston came up with the work, and that Webb, Morris, and everybody else essentially just changed the work a little bit to make a buck. And incredible stuff, and he's got all the research to show that he is correct. It's pretty wild. But if you get a chance to talk with Brother Daniel Gardner, please take him up on it. And he is a wonderful expert and a great resource when it comes to that kind of thing. Super smart guy. After that, we heard some jurisdiction reports, like different Grand Lodges would have their educational chairman stand up and give a report on the state of Masonic education. Standout reports, of course, came from Ohio, which was great. Scott gave a great report for Illinois. Then we actually broke for lunch, had a breakout session to talk about what's going right and what's going wrong in our jurisdictions. And it was guised under the question of, where do you find Masonic inspiration, and then how do you explain that inspiration to other people in order to give them inspiration Masonically? And we went all over the map. It was definitely a productive hour-long discussion in groups. We had groups of eight. I think we had six groups of eight, maybe less. There was only 33 attendees, maybe 32 attendees at the whole conference. I think maybe toward the end a couple people showed up, so at most 35. For a Midwest conference, I was a little disappointed at the attendance. Okay, I was a lot disappointed with the attendance. I think that maybe just comes from seeing very, very successful organizations who have no Grand Lodge backing put on educational forums and symposiums that, you know, bring in minimum 100 people. So it was interesting to see that somehow when it's Grand Lodge sanctioned, maybe there just isn't the pull to go. I'm not sure why. If we think about it, we had hundreds of people go to Attleboro MasonicCon. More than 30 people flew in probably to go to MasonicCon, spent money. And this is a Grand Lodge sanctioned event where 30 people went, where typically the Grand Lodges pay for their people to go, and there's only 33 attendees. I mean, that's kind of interesting. But, you know, I have to say they missed out, because that presentation by Brother Daniel Gardner was awesome, well worth the lack of sleep. Then we actually had Brother Sean Iyer from the George Washington Memorial come out and talk on some of the meanings as it relates to the lodge in three key texts. Now, it was a great academic paper that he presented, or presentation rather, and Brother Sean and Brother Dan really knocked it out of the park. And then we went to dinner and had some drinks later and spent the evening at a table with Brother Sean Iyer, and he was just fantastic. So, yeah, it was a great time, a good thing. You know, next year this is going to be in Nebraska, so I hope you guys remember this. I'll try to bring it up again sometime in April of next year. Hopefully we can get the word out and more people will go. I'm hoping to see Brother Adam Thayer, if you're listening. Next year it's in your state, so I'm hoping to see you there. I know Scott and I and Spencer are likely to take the train out there to see you at all, and maybe I can go to my family's pizza joint. I haven't been there in years. I wonder if they even still own it. I should probably look that up. If they do, maybe I get a free pizza. Anyway. So that's my report on the Midwest Conference. I think it's definitely worthwhile. I wish more people would go. It's kind of a kept secret, and I'm not really sure why, but it's probably due to the lack of publicity about the event. So let's drum it up a little bit. I hope you guys check it out next year, and then the year after that in 2021, it'll actually be right here in Illinois. That's right. It's going to be cool. I'm really excited about it. I'm also really excited about next year. Brother Bobby, who's the new president of the Midwest Conference, is in Nebraska. So he's very excited to start planning, and I'm really excited for him also. So this week I actually have two papers, and the first one comes from the Midnight Freemasons, and it's by Brother Bill Hosler, and it's called In My Room. There's a world where I can go and tell my secrets to. In my room, in this world I lock out all my worries and my fears in my room. The lyrics written are from the song In My Room, written by Brian Wilson and Gary Usher. The song was released by the group The Beach Boys in 1963 and was the B-side to their hit entitled Be True to Your School. Wilson said the song was inspired by his bedroom growing up in California in the 1950s. He claimed his bedroom was his kingdom, a place of solitude, away from the prying eyes of the outside world, or as the lyrics say, a place to tell my secrets to. I could totally identify with this song as a young tween through my teenage years. There was nothing like the privacy of my own room. The space had once been an open porch on the back of the house, in which my father enclosed and converted into a laundry room for my mother. As we grew, the room was converted into a bedroom. I was the oldest child, so it was offered to me. Since it had once been a porch, there was no heating in this space. So it was cold in the winter and hot in the summer. It was just a 10-foot by 10-foot room with unfinished sheetrock for walls and a linoleum floor, but to me it was my sanctuary. My room was a place where I could escape from my younger siblings and be who I wanted to be, a no-judgment zone. I remember lying in my bed, dreaming of my future, far away from the small Indiana town I grew up in. I dreamed of traveling the world, finding my place, where I was meant to be. It was a place I could contemplate my life, where I nurtured my hopes and dreams and sometimes consoled myself after a defeat, which at that time seemed devastating. To me, it was a place where I learned to think critically and where to study. not only what I learned from books, but what I learned from life and about myself. My room was also the place I could invite my friends and we could talk about anything inside those four walls and not worry about someone hearing our secrets and telling others. From our fears to confessing to the undying love we had for our latest crush to, well, just about anything else. We were safe to express our feelings and be who we were and who we wanted to be. It was one of my first steps in creating trust and friendships that last a lifetime. I learned how important it was to keep my word and the secrets of someone else and how important it was to me that my secrets be kept and the importance of judging in whom you put your trust. I think I'm safe in saying my room was the place my heart was first prepared to become a Mason. As you grow older, chances are you will lose this private space. If you go to college, you will share a dorm room with another person. If you skip college, unless you are very lucky, you will have to share a space with a roommate, because entry-level pay rarely allows a young person the luxury of renting a home or apartment by yourself. As you continue down life's road, you will meet someone you want to share the rest of your life with. This means you will share a bedroom with your mate, and all the rest of your dwelling will be shared spaces with your spouse, or your children, or both. The men I know handle this issue in several different ways. Some men build themselves a shop where they can do woodworking or work on cars in their garages. Others create a den or a study where they will retreat for solitude. I believe whether they realize it or not, I think this recent trend for men to want to build quote-unquote man caves is a way to cure this unspoken need most men have in their lives for a place away from the family, a place they love for a little while just to sit and reflect on their lives and perhaps recharge themselves. All of these are much better than my father's method, which was locking himself in the family bathroom for a long period with a newspaper for a prolonged period. It's just my opinion, but I think unconsciously we're looking for this refuge when we look at joining a Masonic lodge. These men who are searching for spirituality are looking for a place of self-reflection and a place where they will find like-minded men who won't judge them, who will listen to their hopes and fears and help them on their journey for self-reflection. It has been said in the past that Masonic lodges were the choice place for men returning from fighting World War II. These servicemen were looking for a type of brotherhood that they experienced while they were in the service, men who understood them and what they went through. I think this may be why the group Tom Brokaw dubbed the Greatest Generation became known as a group of quote-unquote joiners. They were all looking for someone or something to help them find their place in life or help them endure the memories they were trying to suppress. As the years have progressed, so have several generations of men. While I believe the men of today still want friendship like their grandfathers did, they are also looking for a way to connect with other men. In real time, person to person, these young men are looking to fill a void within themselves. Many are looking for a spiritual and an intellectual path to guide themselves through their lives. In a world where friendships and all of the information of a millennium can be accessed with the stroke of a computer key or the touch of a tiny screen on a mobile device, they want a place where they can go and become a better man and, at the same time, build lifelong friendships and a way to define who they are through self-reflection, education, and genuine human interactions. I know everyone didn't grow up with a room to themselves like I did, and sadly many people didn't have a great childhood. There is no way I can change those experiences, but I feel like I can be a small part of the change for their experience in a lodge room. Just like those who grew up in a less than ideal atmosphere, many brethren leave our lodges behind because their experiences inside the lodge room weren't as fulfilling as they had envisioned. Many younger men aren't finding the experiences they were looking for inside our rooms. They come to us seeking education not only about how the world works and history, but they hope to discover something within themselves which will make them better husbands, fathers, and all around better men. The experience of listening to minutes and the desperation of the treasurer and the pleas of members for help with degree work or to flip pancakes isn't what they expected, so they leave us behind. Many of them do find that peace and knowledge within a traditional observance lodge, but not every brother is lucky enough to have a lodge like that in his area. I believe this is a real shame. Not only are we missing the opportunity to ensure the future of the craft, but also we miss the opportunity to fulfill our purpose. As we tell the world we make good men better, we have an opportunity to give these young men the quiet refuge of a safe and contemplative space for themselves. We are also missing an opportunity to help these men walk down that level of life, giving them the good and wholesome instruction we received through our own lives, our fortunes and mistakes. A chance to share what we have learned from each other. I wish I could wave a magic wand and create a lodge experience I had in my mother lodge. Sadly, most of those brethren have slipped away to the celestial lodge above. There isn't a day that goes by that my mind doesn't drift back to the fun I had with those guys. Inside that 60-foot by 40-foot room, it was the room in which I was raised, received my past master's degree, and served in the Oriental chair. Those memories, they always bring a smile to my face. I know this song is not in any way related to Masonry, but while I was listening to the song, I can't help but find things in the lyrics which remind me of my Masonic journey. Now it's dark and I'm alone, but I won't be afraid. In my room. Bill Hosler. Now comes the point in the show where I ask you to help support this show. How do we do that? Well, we have a bunch of different ways to do that today. If you head on over to WCYpodcast.com, you can click on direct donation through PayPal, which we briefly touched on in the beginning of the program. Of course, you can make that one-time donation, or you can sign up to be a monthly contributor. Contributing $2 a month, $5, or even $10 a month, whatever you choose, really helps the program out. Of course, we have a limited edition shop where you can pick up any number of items that come direct from us. Help us out by going to MasonicRevival.com, but also we have some other affiliates that are really important. Banker's Best, one of the most unique things we've ever done, is to work with Brother Levi Banker out of St. Louis, who owns his own company called Banker's Best Beard and Skincare. He's been so generous. If you head to WCYpodcast.com, click on More, then click on Banker's Best, and you can check out a bunch of the different products he's got. He's got a whole line of beard care products, skincare, oils, balms, all of this stuff, and he has been doing it a long time. He knows a lot about it. Everything is handmade, quality items. We even came up with the King Solomon's Reserve Beard Balm, which is a few years old now, but remains one of the great products that he still offers. Even the artwork on the bottle was done by a brother. The nice thing about this particular product is 50% of the proceeds come back to the program. If you're a history guy like me, then you'll be pleased to know that what makes the beard oil and balm very special is that it was made utilizing the fragrances specific to the exports of King Solomon's time and location, which is amazing. So black fig and honey is the formula. Luxurious scent, as Levi says, truly fit for our first Grand Master. If you use the promo code BBWCY357 at checkout, you'll also get a little bit of a percentage off. Please check that out. Banker's Best, or just head on over to buybankersbest.com. We also have a code with On It. You can go to our website, click on More, then go to On It, and you can click through any of the links here, or just go to onit.com and use the promo code WCY at checkout. You'll get 10% off, and they'll send a little bit back to the program to help us out. And of course, it's business time. The book that I wrote with John T. Ruark, it is making some real waves, and people are using it and seeing success. So check that out on Amazon. You can click right to it. You can get it on Audible, Kindle, or in print, even on iBooks. And last but not least, I want to ask you to check out the Great Books program. You'll see the banner for it on the left-hand side, Intellectual Linear Progression. Use the promo code WCY, or you can just click on that link there, and you'll actually go right to the website and hear a little bit from Scott Hambrick about how awesome the program is. So that's it. I hope you guys enjoy, and thank you so much for helping us out. All right, now the next piece I have for you is called Do the Shriners Connect Freemasonry to Islam? This is by Brother Jonathan Dinsmore, Entered Apprentice. Published April 8, 2019. Founded in 1872, the Shriners, or the Ancient Arabic Order of the Nobles of the Mystic Shrine, are a Masonic organization dedicated to fundraising for charity, and other fraternal activities. Who are the Shriners? How are they related to Freemasonry, and do they connect Freemasonry to Islam in some way? While most believe the Shriners, or the ancient Arabic order of the Nobles of the Mystic Shrine, to be merely a Masonic club where Masons get together outside the regular lodge to have fun and do some charity work, is there actually a more mysterious history to the organization beneath the surface level? Today, we'll learn a few things about the Shriners and their origins and investigate whether they truly connect Freemasonry to Islam. As always, this writing does not reflect the official views of the Universal Co-Masonry, but is merely the views of one Co-Mason. Partying for the greater good. One of the things that the Shriners are best known for is being an organization in which Freemasons cut loose a bit, engage in socializing, convene and organize for celebrations or pursuit of various hobbies. One does have to be a Master Mason, or third degree, to become a Shriner. Although the Shrine itself does not represent a new or different degree within the Scottish Rite. Each Shriner temple, often decorated in Middle Eastern style, draws Masons from a wide area, as they are fewer and further between than Masonic temples. Thus, these buildings are places where Masons from the surrounding region convene and are somewhat more like convention centers than a typical temple. Each contains clubs or units within it, which are related to various hobbies or activities that Masons may take an interest in, ranging from chess clubs to motorcycle groups. Shriners also engage in fundraising activities for charity and organizing lively parades. Relatively recent origins. Formed in 1872, the Shriners are a self-described spin-off from Freemasonry, with an added element of fun and philanthropy. The conventional story of the Shriner origins goes that the organization was created by Walter M. Fleming and William J. Florence. This was after Florence, an actor on tour, was initiated by an Arabian diplomat at a party in France by virtue of being a member of the audience of a performance the diplomat had organized. Later, Florence and Fleming combined elements that they had learned from Masonry with what Florence had seen from the performance at the party and created the ancient Arabic order of the Noble of the Mystic Shrine. The organization grew from there, eventually becoming what it is today. Of course, like anything connected to Freemasonry or any other quote-unquote secret society, there are Shriner conspiracy theorists, usually of the fundamentalist variety, which believe otherwise. These conspiracists base their arguments on the usual leaps to conclusions and sporadic dot connecting we are accustomed to seeing from the crowd. They seem to think that the organization is connected to the religion of Islam, tracing back to the first millennium AD. While it is true that there is some Islam-related symbolism in Shriner regalia, not least of which some variations of their signature fez, including the word Mecca, there is no firmly established historical evidence tying the Shriners to Islam. Indeed, it would be difficult to adopt an Arabic aesthetic without some elements of Islam cropping up. The fez itself long predates Shriners, originating in Morocco, perhaps as far back as the 900s AD, and was merely adopted by the Shriners. Is it as simple as it seems? However, as we saw in the standard origin narrative, it did begin with the initiation of two Masons into a secret society by an Arabian diplomat. Although this seemed to be a simple party initiation of not much consequence, something like, "You've seen the play, now I declare you members," at least from the story handed down to us. However, is that really the case? What was the organization that they were initiated into that began this fraternal spin-off? I have not been able to find any information on the diplomat or even the name of the organization. However, some Shriner sources do mention that Brother Florence got his inspiration for the Shriner aesthetic, not just from that party in France, but also from attending two more ceremonies, presumably of the same organization, in Algiers and Cairo. I suppose we could speculate without much evidence. But what would be the point? There are no clear and concrete indications of the Shriners' connection to Islam that I could find, only conspiratorial suspicions based primarily on the icons they use and the mysterious question mark as to the organization that originally initiated them. via the Arabian diplomat. Is there more to be found here? Perhaps. But until then, I am not convinced that there is a connection. Now, some of you may be wondering why I chose to read an article from the Universal Co-Masonry website. Well, I thought the article was good. It's a question that's often asked, and there really wasn't another article out there that touched on this basis. So, I thought it was a good enough article to read on the show, and I thought it was really well done. It asks a question, leaves an open ending, and maybe there's somebody out there who's done that extra research to find out maybe where these two extra ceremonies were, what they were involved in, and maybe what they entailed. Interesting stuff, though. It takes it a little bit deeper than just this story of a couple guys who were inspired and created some spin-off of Freemasonry. So, very cool stuff. And I'll have a link back to this article if anybody wants to check out the actual article or anything else on the website. Now, that's it for this week. I want to thank everybody for their wonderful support in the WCY podcast and for making Skull and Crown a wild success that we sold out in like 6 minutes. It was really awesome. So we'll have more of the notebooks, the prototypes. I'll have more of those coming. And once I get them, I will have to get busy doing some branding on them and completing the aesthetic here at my humble abode / workshop, all that good stuff. So keep your eyes peeled. We'll announce all that stuff as soon as we get it in. And we're a little bit closer to a big announcement. I got to connect with some people again at the recent MasonicCon where I was given confirmation that we were going to proceed with this really cool thing. So I just want to let you guys know we're a little bit closer there. Hopefully I'll have some news to report next week on the next episode, and we'll be able to reveal something really cool. But until then, you'll have to be on the edge. Alright. That's it. So, thank you so much, everybody. I hope you have a wonderful week. Until the next time we talk, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.